Burton Radio.
I'm Ray Burton, and welcome to another Let's Talk Gardening podcast. Our mission is to provide listeners with interesting, informative topics and up-to-date information. My co-host is Faye Caro, an award-winning gardener, horticulturalist and media presenter. Faye's passion is educating people. Oh, and she loves bugs a lot too. My passion is simply beautiful, healthy gardens. And together, each week, we cover many great gardening subjects.
Saturday morning and here come the girls, Ray and Faye, with Let's Talk Gardening.
Hello, gardening friends. Hope you're doing really, really well out there. We are ready to go. Our number is 94841927. And when you call in this morning, you'll be speaking to the gorgeous Jill Flores. Our email address is gardening@curtinfm.com.au. That's another good way to contact us today. And a big shout out to Alan Simons and his chirpy PA, Peter Kelly, for kicking off Saturday morning in perfect style. And, oh, a lot of humour, trust me. A lot of humour goes on behind the scenes, doesn't it, Faye?
It does.
And our cycling DJ, Jim Crinan, presented the cycling wrap-up just now. And Jim returns next Saturday. Speaking of humour, how are you going?
Very good. Thank you, Ray.
You're
busy
already
here
at work.
Doing my homework.
Yeah. So, yes, what sort of week have you had?
Oh, I've had a bit of a gardening week.
That's great.
Yesterday.
You needed to, didn't you? You needed to get back into your garden.
Yes. Yeah. I've been moving my patio plants around again.
Where do you move them around to?
Well, I've emptied a couple of tables and then filled them up again.
Yeah.
I pull plants off stands that, you know, were hidden away, maybe missing out on water. So I sort of pull them out and think, oh, you need a repot. So I've got all the bags of mixes ready to make up a new brew, and then it'll be a mass repotting before it gets too cold. And then I'll go, well, where would you like to live? I've got bromeliads to come out of the shade house, like 8 trays of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I've got extras that I need to part with somewhere or put into the garden, whatever comes first, gaps to fill. I planted some more natives and checked on them. Planted them yesterday, checked this morning.
They're still there.
They are, but something had a nibble on my little gum tree.
Already.
So
the one you bought.
The
Xantharia.
Eucalyptus Christiana.
Yeah.
Beautiful silver foliage.
Stunning one.
Fluffy yellow. Lemon blooms.
Mm.
So they'll get cages.
Yeah, I bet they will. Now, there is a breakdown on Great Eastern Highway eastbound at Tonkin Highway in Redcliffe. The left lane is blocked. There's no traffic delays. However, do drive with caution. So that's Great Eastern Highway eastbound at Tonkin Highway in Redcliffe. Left lane is blocked. Okay, we shall carry on. Now, we've got a couple of guests coming into the studio at around 20 to 9. Tell everybody who we have.
We have got Catherine Hubble from Biotiful.
Yes.
And when I last caught up with Catherine on Facebook recently, she was driving around the streets getting inspiration from green verges.
Mm. Okay.
So I think what that means is she was looking out to see what was doing well and what was easy maintenance and looks good and surviving through the 6 months of dry summer that we've just had.
And the council seemed to be getting on board, even my own council, which surprises me, with offering free plants for people to plant their verges out. So they are getting on board to try and green things up, plant more trees, etc., which is finally fantastic. I know some councils have been doing that for a long time, but it'd be great to see the verges. Yeah, there's nothing worse than seeing an awful sandy verge just...
Well, it's an opportunity, Ray. Our wildlife has suffered immensely.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know we can all do our little bit by planting native plants and providing for the birds and the bees. And
it's, I think we're preaching to the converted, where the people listening to the show, you know, we're all gardeners. I think we know, but it's the non-gardeners that we have to reach somehow. Yeah.
Mm. We've got non-gardeners listening to our show I believe.
I know.
I mean, everybody lives somewhere and they've either got a pot plant or there's something in the garden.
Mm.
There's not many that would live in a concrete jungle.
Okay. There's a bit goes on in a few suburbs I've lived in. All right. Our phone number is 94841927. We're heading to Clarkson. Gloria, how are you?
Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Yes. Morning. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Gloria. Go ahead.
Okay. I've recently moved into Clarkson. My lawn looked pretty sad at the time when I moved in, but I've bought it back and it's mostly buffalo with bit of cooch and da-da-da. A lot of runners on top of the lawn. Why is that? The buffalo runners.
That is the nature of that lawn.
Yeah.
How often are you mowing, Gloria?
Well, it was every 2 weeks, but it's all quietened down a little bit now, so it'd probably be once a month.
Okay. You could mow it more regularly just to keep it in check, or you could get out there with your scissors and just snip them off.
I do that. Yeah.
How big is your lawn?
It's 10 by 10 metres.
Okay.
So it's not huge. And I want to top dress it shortly, so I thought I should get rid of them all before I top dress and everything.
Gloria, I don't think you should be adding any top dressing to your soil at this time of year.
Oh, okay. When should I do that?
Well, spring, when the soil temperature starts to warm up. With the colder nights that we're getting, everything slows down. And this is a lesson to everyone, because lawn won't regrow very well when it's cooler. Okay, the growing season is when it's warm, so that's when you do your repair. If you do anything, say you top dressed and did it heavily, that is going to have a detrimental effect to the lawn, and it may also provide opportunity for weed seeds to blow in and get going. So you really need to keep optimum health in your lawn. Don't set it back. Don't park anything on it. Don't put anything on top that's going to slow it down, and certainly do not mow too low and open it up, because that's where weeds will get in.
Okay, then. Thank you very much for all your help.
That's all right. A very timely call indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gloria. Cheers.
Bye.
And Lisa Passmore is also joining us this morning. She's the executive officer of the nursery and garden industry of WA. And among many hats that she wears, she's a garden designer, a lecturer, and a horticulturalist. Now, she's coming in to talk about the Perth Garden Festival primarily, which is on in May between the 9th and the 12th at Langley Park. So we look forward to hearing what Lisa's been up to, what we could expect to see this year at the Garden Festival. We're very much looking forward to it. And we have 4 tickets to give away as well, compliments of the nursery and gardening industry. So yeah, stay tuned for that as well. So we're going to have 2 guests coming in from 20 to 9. We have some emails to get through. We welcome your calls. Whilst in the first half hour of the show, we'll get through all our homework.
Good idea, Ray. This has come in from Wilecki, and she has sent in a photo of a bug that's got triangle patterns on its back of orange and black with white dots, and this is a common bug that many people may have seen moving around your gardens. It's a red seed-eating bug or milkweed bug, and they're very common, but they don't seem to do any harm. Certainly in the hot months, you can see lots of them. They'll be mating, they'll be moving around bare soil, they'll be in gardens and milkweed plants, for example, and I think they carry seeds around, so not harmful at all.
He's very pretty to look at.
Very.
Yeah.
And they're only small. They're pretty quick when they get moving.
Yeah.
Very photogenic.
Yeah. If you can catch him.
Now, we've also received a photo of an everlasting frangipani. This is from Bev in Erskine. And this is a very sick-looking frangipani. They're sometimes known as the hammerhead frangipani.
Yeah.
They're frost tolerant, though I think in Mandurah you would be okay. Your climate is a little bit warmer than what we get in Jandakot. This is the sort of condition I would expect to see one coming out of winter in a cold area. But looking down, there seems to be quite a bit of damage to the trunk. Yeah. And I think also in the picture is a stake, looks like a garden stake, very close to the trunk. Mm. But the damage is probably what's causing the decline. It's impeded the nutrient or goodness getting up to the plant. The only thing that I think you could do, and this is going back to a lesson from Chris Oliver about regenerating trees, and where the outer layer of bark is damaged and broken, you can get a potato peeler or a sharp knife and slice down that edge. Now, what that will do, well, there will be two edges actually that wrap around. You slice down and open up those wounds, and that plant will regrow. So it will start to heal and wrap around again. Now, when that has happened, you'll probably want to go back and do that again, because it'll only get so far. So you open up that damaged edge again, and it will regrow, and eventually it could heal the plant. Going into the cold weather, I think there is some risk that it may not recover at all. And there's a lot of branches at the top with no leaves. I'm reluctant to say cut it back, because I think that could be, once again, the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, clinch the deal.
It's hard to know. The other thing to do might be to get it out and put it in a pot and have a look what the roots are actually like. It may be too far gone. I think maybe I'd consider doing that, putting it into a pot and cutting back some of the top and putting it in a drier area, shade house or hot house, where it might be a bit warmer, away from water. Because if you cut the top, you could end up with fungal disease in there as well. And this tree can't cope with anything else.
Mm.
Good luck. I think it's going to be a hard one to deal with.
Resurrect.
Okay. Now, also on today,
yes,
the Open Gardens have a beautiful secret garden open. It's raising funds for breast cancer, and it's in the grounds of Core Cider.
Yeah, interesting, right?
Which is an 80-year-old orchard. So the hidden secret garden has espaliered apple and pear trees, a hidden oasis of lawns, pond plants and bridge. And, of course, up in the hills, you've got all the autumn glory of the trees changing colour. So that will be a picturesque garden. There's a restaurant and cafe there. So up in Pickering Brook, could be a lovely weekend today and tomorrow.
And the weather's going to be lovely. So, yeah, we couldn't recommend more. How gorgeous, right?
Absolutely.
And I don't think this garden will be open. It's not a regular, is it? It's just almost a one-off.
Yes. So pretty special.
And I bet autumn's looking prettier up there, down here.
You'd want to have a day trip up there, wouldn't you, Ray?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of nice nurseries in close range. Mm. Absolutely. So wonderful. All right. Now,
I've got more.
Yeah. Let's go. Okay. Got a couple of minutes before my first break.
So Ruth had sent us in photos of her bore water and it was done by Pool Centre. So
when we had Linda and Paul in, they recommended that you can take a sample of water to a pool shop.
Oh, is that why it's happened?
Yeah, to a pool shop. Right. And most of the time they're very happy to oblige in testing it for you.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, well, they have done. I've also spoken to Carl Barry from Growth Technology, and I will get together with him again during the week. And we're going to nut out a short interview that will tackle the topic of this and see where it might go. Because as you and I know, he's very experienced in technologies regarding to fertilizers, testing of water, etc. And there's a whole lot to it. And I think what we need to do is look at it from a really grassroots level.
I agree.
And so we'll address the bore water testing as well as an email that came from Gail about salts.
Yeah.
And that's huge. Mm. But him and I will have a conversation. We'll work out how we can
tackle this,
get into this, because he's got so much knowledge and it could easily be over everyone's head.
Yeah.
So we've got to start from a base level and build on that. So that's coming in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I look forward to that as well. Okay, we shall return shortly. 100.1 FM. And you're with Ray and Faye. This is Let's Talk Gardening, 22 minutes after 8. And we're heading to Mandurah. We're actually going to be talking about the frangie that we were just covering off on the email. Bev, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Now, I did pick up part of that conversation, but I didn't realise that was my frangipani.
Oh.
Yes, it's looking, sorry, I was a bit late tuning in this morning. Yes, I'm just so disappointed with it.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
How did it get damaged, Bev?
I've got no idea. No idea. And I didn't realise, because I've got a lot of red ruby around, I just don't know what happened there. For the last few years, it's just been magnificent, such a showpiece.
Mm.
But as you could see at the bottom of these, the main trunk, there's quite a bit of scarring in there, if that's what they call it.
Yes, it's damaged and it's compromised the plant.
Mm. Yes. And now, was that the part I heard you speaking about getting a peeler and peeling some of that back?
Yes,
or?
It's about tree physiology, and plants, trees particularly, are very adept at healing themselves. So, you know, when you've got the bark of a tree and it wraps around and there's damage, it almost has two outer surfaces that don't meet. So what you do is you get a sharp knife and you scrape down that. So you're opening up the wound and the tree will want to heal itself, so it will start growing.
It's
going to be a bit of work, and you've got a lot of branching on the top of that plant. So, you know, I don't know, unless you've got new growth coming, it might be too far gone. It looks pretty sad.
It does, But I haven't done anything to it till I speak to someone regarding, you know, the problem. And I was, you know, really hesitant to cut it back.
Yes. I'm concerned that if you cut it back with, well, hopefully rain's coming, the environment will be drier, will be wet and cooler, and then it's open to fungal disease, which going into cooler weather, this plant won't appreciate.
Okay. So I think I heard part of the show that said to take it out and pot it and
I think that's your best chance. Put it into a drier environment where you can control the water. You can give it its best chance, but I think you might find you're better off replacing it. I think it's going to give you a bit of heartache.
I think. Are they easily obtained? I mean, I had that given to me.
They're not common. They're not common at all. So you want to hunt around, and I'd probably wait till the warmer weather. It'll settle in better. So you've got time to look.
Yeah. All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you very much for your information.
You're welcome, Bev. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And Bev, if you just listen to our sponsorships, you'll hear a frangipani specialist that is one of our sponsors in the program. That would be a good place to start with the Everlasting if you want to replace it.
Yeah, and who was that with? Sorry,
If you have a listen to our sponsorships breaks, one of the people that is a sponsor, one of the clients, they are a frangipani specialist. So stay tuned; you'll hear them this morning. Thanks, Bev.
Thank you.
Cheers for that.
Bye.
Bye. I reckon that would have, that would be a no-brainer. Absolutely. Okay, now there's also traffic signals blacked out. Intersection of Nangara Road and Drumpalia Drive in Ellenbrook. Know the area well. Technicians are aware. Please slow down and give way to your right. So that's the intersection of Nangara Road and Drumpalia Drive, Ellenbrook. The traffic signals are blacked out. Drive with caution, I would say.
Absolutely. There's too many things happening on our roads.
I know, it's wicked.
Last weekend, Sheila sent us in an email. It was regarding something that I said about keywords for gardening and having a garden, designing your garden now after summer with the thought that next year is probably going to be the same or worse. How can you plan your garden so that it looks good all year round? And she says she enjoys regularly listening to our show and been pondering my advice about thinking about the challenging conditions. She says, luckily, ours has fared very well. And I thought the following might be helpful for our listeners. We live in Hillary's on the coast, use Retic twice a week in summer, do nearly no hand watering and use no products at all. We trim our bushes every 6 weeks and mulch every 2 to 3 years. Basically, our garden is very colourful and easy care. So they have a variety of hibiscus, Indian hawthorn, which is the Raphiolepis, daisies, geraniums, bougainvillea, succulents, money plant or mother-in-law tongue, and Irish roses. I don't know that one. And she hopes that helps. And that's great. We actually visited a beautiful garden up in Maida Vale on Sunday with the garden club, and they had some of those types of plants in the garden. And I know their neighbours had bougainvilleas, and they were just looking amazing. Well-trimmed, variety of foliage colours.
Yeah.
Blooms just about all year round, mm-hmm. responds well to pruning.
Yeah.
And water-wise, to say nothing
so
else.
So you've always got colour happening. Just keep it managed.
Exactly.
Can't go wrong.
So I started thinking about my keywords.
Keywords.
So resilient.
For the plants in your garden.
Easy or least maintenance. Well, you know, some of the areas, I'll have my fussy areas, but least maintenance for the bigger areas.
Yeah.
Looks good or interesting in 40 plus degrees or minus temperatures. And what I mean by that is, so my ornamental flowering plums with the burgundy foliage, to me, they don't look interesting when they've lost all their leaves. But they are interesting in that they change, it signals new seasons, it's something to look forward to. And all that leaf drop helps feed the soil underneath. So, yeah, they add interest. And another one is forgiving.
forgiving plants.
Well, if you're... Retic goes off and you don't notice it.
And they won't
something
just turn up their
will
toes
come back
the next day.
Yeah. And so looking at, around at my garden at the moment, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I knew the bones were there. They just had to be, you know, zhuzhed up a bit. So I've been raking pathways. I've been mowing and blowing. So mowing the lawn and blower vacuuming the driveways and trimming some of the plants into shape, like my beautiful Eucalyptus cinerea, that was like 3 metres tall. So lop that down to a couple of metres and we'll get the amazing new growth, which, of course, is great for floristry.
Yeah.
And I've just started on that car park garden. So there's bottle brush in there, there's grass trees, and it just looks, it looks nicer for now until the weeds come.
Yeah.
And then then it's an opportunity to plant underneath.
Yeah, okay. Another challenge.
Oh, always.
Okay. Now, vegetable-wise, what should we be doing at the moment? What would you say?
Yeah,
it's garlic time.
It certainly is. Prepare. Do all your preparation now. The nurseries, we'll probably talk to Trevor Gay in the next few weeks to see what he's got on offer. It's time for broad beans.
They're one of my favourites, you know. I love broad beans, yeah.
What about carrots? There's something...
I'm not a carrot person, but... Yeah.
But their flowers are amazing.
True.
and they will grow themselves. They will grow in an area that has been previously prepared and grown in. Mm. So they're probably better as a second crop. Mm-hmm. What happens with carrots? If you prepare the soil, if there's any rocks in there or any fertilizer in there, they will actually fork. So you want a really loose, friable soil.
Yeah.
Add compost. Add something that will hold water into your soil. I like a slow-release fertilizer, but vegetables, when they're growing, need to grow quickly.
Yeah, so they need a bit more thrown at them.
Mm. Yeah, whether it's an organic fertilizer, something like Charlie Carb or a seaweed product, that will all help. Blood and bone.
Yeah, perfect.
And nice slow-release fertilizer. Liquids, something if you're not in a strictly organic, Power Feed, Aquasol, Miracle-Gro, anything along those lines really does give your plants a boost. Mm. And don't forget your companion planting. Coriander will grow very well now. Mm. Often it will bolt in the warmer weather.
Again, one of my faves.
It's time for all your brassicas. So your cabbages, your broccoli. There are broccolis that are bunching and you can actually pick the stems and they will regrow. So you can get a continual harvest. Mm. Silver beet and rainbow chard. If you want a pretty garden, go for the rainbow chard. It's got the pinks and reds and yellow stems, orange, and they look gorgeous and they're leafy.
Yeah.
Ford Hook Giant is a great silver beet. Mm. Of course, then you've got your English spinach, which you can pick off the young leaves.
Which I love that.
Lettuces grow really well. Cos lettuce.
Yeah.
That'll give you a nice Caesar salad. And, of course, the variety of lettuces and the different colours look amazing
in
the
garden. So now is a very, very good time to get out there and get your veggies in.
Plant marigolds.
Yes.
Because that will ward off the nematodes. Mm-hmm. Other herbs, sage, thyme, parsley. And don't be frightened to let some of them flower and go to seed, because this will provide a magnificent environment for your predatory bugs and your beneficial bugs to hang around and feast off the nuisance ones that come in. Mix them up. Don't plant rows of all the same thing. Make some variety.
So when you're planting it, rather than having a row of rainbow chard, how would you would mix it all around?
Yes, and, doing aquaponics in a bed, I had limited space. So planting a garden for birds where you've got all those layers, I would do the same in a vegetable garden. So lettuces or creeping thyme will take up the space down the bottom. Your rainbow chard, once it's a bit older, will actually grow up tree-like, as will some of your brassicas. If you get bugs on them, I take away the leaves that are infested and I monitor the other ones. So you're creating a hygienic environment. Sometimes those lower leaves will sit on the ground. So by removing them, you're practicing hygiene, you're keeping it clean, and you're stopping the areas where the bugs can actually harbour.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, don't forget your bok choys and your Chinese veg. Mm-hmm. And these are leafy greens that you can have again and again. So your bok choy will grow and it will have this beautiful head. Come in and lop it off, sharp knife at ground level or just above, and it will regrow.
It will grow again. That's a bonus, isn't it?
You can do the same with celery.
Yeah.
You can plant celery from celery that you buy in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
Put that in and it will grow roots, same as your carrot tops.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a whole nother subject.
It sure is. All right, let's head to Dianella. We're saying good day to Richard. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, girls?
Very good. Thanks, Richard.
The gall wasp. I've got a lemon tree, an orange tree and a mandarin tree, and the gall wasp absolutely attacked it.
Yeah.
How do I get rid of it?
Cut it out, Richard.
Yeah, but the trouble is, by the time I cut it out, there'd be no tree left.
This is the problem. Yes.
It is really bad. Yep. I've never had it so bad, Is there any other spray that you can use?
Well, there is some talk of coating it with a clay product. I think that's too late for you now, because they would already be in the stem if they're there.
Oh, yeah, they definitely are. They've blown up to about 10 millimetres in diameter.
Right, okay. That's
terrible.
Well, they did talk about
netting trees.
Yep, but it's too late for that as well.
Yeah, no, I know. Well. I'm talking about the future.
What I was going to say is there was some talk about peeling it back with a potato peeler. Now, I'm not a fan of that because it compromises the growth of that stem. However, it might stop the gall wasp and it might keep your tree growing. You won't get a good crop of fruit because...
So you're saying peel a nodule of the gall wasp nest,
It opens up the stem and the gall wasp can't continue to develop.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that will keep your tree alive, but it won't be a great tree. So maybe do a mix with where you can, judiciously pruning your tree so you cut out what you can, but you leave enough of the tree that it's got enough leaves to photosynthesize and grow.
Yeah. That's about the only way I can do it.
Okay, if you do that, then the time when the gall wasps are flying around, you could net your tree to stop them getting it. You'd have to use a very fine net. And you could try the clay product. And the idea is that will coat the stems and the gall wasp won't be interested or can't get through the clay.
So you actually paint this gall, this clay on, do you?
I think it's a spray. So
sprays it, all right.
Clay in water, clay dust in water can be sprayed over foliage and tree trunks. Right. You, of course, have to get over and under.
And reapply.
And I don't know what the success rate of that is. It's not something I've tried.
All right, I'll give it a try. The other question is, a gentleman rang up last week in regards to catching rats.
Right. Can I just stop you there? We're going to be very careful about what we say about rats, and we're not going to start a flood of rat chats. It's a sensitive topic. So go ahead, Richard.
The gentleman said he used bacon and he used some sort of oil. Can you tell me what sort of oil did he use?
Oh.
Because the rats loved it. Absolutely went crazy over it.
Didn't he light the bacon up with a cigarette lighter and cook?
You wrap bacon around the actual tongue and put a drop of some sort of oil. It was like a drug to them.
We'll get John to...
It was on the podcast. Do you have access to...
I haven't, no.
Okay, all right. Okay, we'll
mention
see
that.
What we can find.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Right. Good on you, Richard.
Will you mention on the program or what?
Yeah. I'll get John to have a look, and we'll mention that for you. So
the recipe.
Okay, love.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a good day, girls.
You too.
Bye.
Okay. Our guests will be joining us shortly, but before they do, I'm going to give away a $75 gift voucher, compliments of Kerry from Bigger Trees. Now, you must be a Curtin FM member and not to have won a prize in the last 28 days. This is one of John's tricky questions. So listening, guys, you'll need to know your music. According to Val Dunican, when Paddy McGinty, an Irishman of note, came into a fortune, what did he buy himself? According to Val Dunican, when Paddy McGinty, an Irishman of note, came into a fortune, what did he buy himself? Give Jill a call now on 9484 1927 if you know the answer.
The music you remember. Curtin Radio.
This is Let's Talk Gardening. Our competition is still running. We will have a winner coming to you very soon. Now, we have been joined in the studio, as I just mentioned, by Lisa Passmore and Catherine Hubble. Hey, ladies, thank you for coming.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
All right. It'll be a great morning having you both here. What I will do before we get chatting is go to Bickley. We're talking daisies. Joe, good morning.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. I do have a question about daisies. Now, I don't know what the different types are because, well, I'm looking for a hardy ground cover, and when I look up daisies, I get African daisies, osteosperms, all different types of names. What are the ones that are the hardy ground covers and the water-wise ones that have the beautiful yellow, peach colour, orange colour flowers and the ones that would work well in a water-wise garden?
Well, Joe, we've got two experts in the studio here, so I'm going to sit back and let these lovely ladies take the chair.
Fabulous. Well,
wonderful.
If I can congratulate you first on looking at daisies because yeah. they're so good for bringing in the pollinators. And it's a very, very big family, the Asteraceae family. But you've mentioned a couple of water-wise ones there. So things like the Brachycombe, which is the native daisy, which is available in a kaleidoscope of colours. So you can find your hot pinks, your lemon yellows, your purples in the Brachycombes. They are stunning. Kathy, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think that's she's spot on there. And the ones you're looking at too, the osteospermums,
yeah,
they're from
great
Africa
colour.
And they're very drought hardy. So for something a little bit taller, if you need a little bit more height, because they'll grow sort of about half a metre high, whereas the brachyscombes are much lower on the ground. So you can even have the brachyscombes in the foreground where you... want to taper down if it's a verge situation, for example, and then bring the higher plants further back.
And another great little one is the yellow buttons, the Chrysocephalum, which doesn't look like a traditional daisy. It's more like the daisy centre, bright, bright yellow with a grey leaf, very low and ground hugging, and that would be a nice complement to all of those.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Joe.
Thank you very much. Are they more annual or perennials, or do you have to plant them every year, or do they live a few years?
The brachycombes are perennial. They're going to flower most of the year round, actually, and they're going to live for 3 to 5 years. You might be lucky to have them self-seed in that time, but otherwise it's a case of 5 years down the track, do a replant in that space.
Wonderful. Sounds like the perfect solution. Thanks very much.
Have fun.
Good. Enjoy, Joe. Yeah.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, we do have a competition winner. This was for the $75 gift voucher from Bigger Trees. The question was, according to Val Dunican, when Paddy McGinty, an Irishman of note, came into a fortune, what did he buy himself? He bought himself a goat. And our winner is Anne from Warnbro. So congratulations, Anne. Enjoy going shopping. And let us know what you get up to with it. We love to hear. Okay, we're in Bennett Springs. Kevin, hi.
Hi, how are you?
We're all great, I think. Thank you.
How can we help you, Kevin?
We're good. We bought ourselves a native redback ginger from a nursery, and when we got it, it was root-bound, so I had to repot it into separate pots. And I've watered it regular, and basically I check on the soil to make sure that it wasn't overwatering, but it died off.
Native redback ginger, did you say?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Where would that be native to, Lisa?
Oh, it is an Australian one. I've got it in my garden, actually. I bought mine from Tuckerbush. Mm. I put mine in the ground, though, so it's much, much happier in the ground where it's getting regular irrigation and it's got space to spread out. So,
Does it grow tall, fairly tall?
Yeah, very tall. Mine's about 2 metres high.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful plant. Lovely with the colour on the back, but... I would, check and see if there's any signs of life in your pot. Maybe pot it out or start over again.
And the other thing is that it may be getting a bit too much sun. I don't know. Lisa, do you have
mine's
yours
in the shade. Yeah. Cool root run as well.
Shady position for those.
I've moved my shade, so hopefully that'll help it. And and I'll repot it and I'll check it to see if it needs to be... if there's any life in it, and I'll dig it in the ground with me.
Well, it should have a rhizome, and they should multiply. I've actually got one in a pot, and the reason I asked, was it native? Because I'm thinking East Coast native, different to what we would think of native to Western Australia. I've found a lot of my gingers do well in pots. They're quite vigorous growers. They like a big pot and they like good drainage. But I've also got the redback ginger sitting in a tub of water. Uh-huh. So it never runs out of water.
Yeah.
And that's actually in the hothouse.
Good thinking. So it might be a water situation as well, water issue.
And the other part of that does it die back? Does it die off? Because ours just died off. Maybe it was overwatering.
I would check the roots, Kevin, because I found that they do like, they will tolerate quite a lot of water. But being a rhizome, your older leaves might die back, but the rhizome will keep growing. So it could either be too wet or too dry.
Okay. All right. Well, no worries. All right. Well, I'll check into that and I'll have a look and I'll, see how it goes.
Good luck with that. Right. Yeah, the answer often lies in the roots. And when you empty out a pot, you can tell exactly what's going on the minute you do.
Exactly. I've seen it a few times in my pots that I'll repot and check out. So,
Let us know, please.
I will do. I'll let you know how it goes.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank
Cheers.
You,
okay. Bye.
And Lynn in Bentley and Ivan of South Perth both called in to say that the oil that was added to the bacon for the rat recipe is aniseed oil.
Okay.
Thank you for your memories, guys. Better than ours. And Annette in Sorrento called in to say that a kitchen blowtorch is good for the gall wasp. So okay. You'd burn the...
Wow.
But I wonder what damage you do to the stem.
Once again, if you are... blowtorching your stems, you're compromising the growth to the end of that. It might be a short-term fix. It's not necessarily going to benefit the tree, but the tree may respond. I understand if you've got gall wasp all over the tree and you do a hard cutback, you may lose the tree. I don't think there's a good answer or a good outcome, is there? It's a terrible pest. Maybe try traps.
Has anyone tried using sawfly larvae frass?
Oh.
There's a couple of different products which might...
The frass is interesting. Yeah,
yeah. So I probably would try a fairly heavy
feed of that?
Application of that, yeah.
Yeah.
And to see if that will... generate some chitinase in the system, which breaks down the chewing parts of insects.
People have nothing to lose.
That's right, yeah.
They're losing their fruit trees. Yes, and also Annette wanted to say she enjoyed Faye's high tea, which was fabulous.
That was a day to remember, wasn't it?
It was a very pleasant
lovely
day
memory.
And lovely to meet a lot of our listeners as well. It was very, very good. Yeah, John thinks a blowtorch might damage the plant. That's our John, is it? Our John thinks it. Yeah, so, yeah, the jury's out. But thank you for ringing in and letting us know what you guys get up to and your comments. We do appreciate that.
And don't get a blowtorch out in the current conditions because there's a fire ban out.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Okay, tell us about the garden festival, Lisa.
Oh, yes,
how's it looking? What can we expect to see? I'm a cereal shopper. Everyone knows that.
Wonderful. We expect to see you down there, Ray.
Oh, yes. Yes, I keep it. I think I roll it just all by myself. What's wrong?
Actually, yes.
Faye's right. I get I get carried away, particularly when we're talking shopping. Okay, I shall return. Curtain Radio. And yes, we are actually here. We do get chatty in our little breaks, all garden chat, of course. We were talking about the Perth Garden Festival that comes up between the 9th and the 12th of May. Lisa, go ahead. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so the Perth Garden and Outdoor Living Festival is on again at Langley Park in Perth. As you said, starting on the 9th and culminating on the 12th, which is Mother's Day.
Yes. Great day to take mum or grandparents, yeah.
Fantastic. So there'll be things for everyone. It's free entry for kids. Yeah. Kids right up to the age of 18.
Gee, that's pretty good.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Very, very good.
and lots of different demonstrations. We've got, of course, our soil solver stage for gardening talks and expert Q&A. Waterwise garden design workshops will be also on offer. Bailey's have a Mother's Day gift workshop with a free pot plant takeaway. Plus the Bailey's Plant Market with a wide range of plants, everything you can imagine.
Oh, good.
And it's also a great place to find other deals on things like barbecues and outdoor furniture.
Yeah,
all that. Greenhouses, mulches, every kid
pots,
gardener
needs everything.
A mulcher.
Yeah.
So, and we'll have some stunning show gardens as well.
Oh, will you?
Yes.
Tell us more about those, Lisa.
Well, can't give too much away.
Oh, come on.
But I do know that our friends at the Landscape Design Landscape Industry Association WA are creating some amazing show gardens for us. I know of at least three show gardens. I've seen a little sneak preview of one of the designs, and very excited about that. So this year the show gardens will be judged by the people. So it's a people's choice.
That's a good idea.
And you scan a QR code to vote.
Yeah.
And one winner who votes on those show gardens will get a year's supply of black marvel rose and flower food for their garden.
Oh, I'm there.
From
I'm
Witchgrow. Absolutely. So lots to see and do. And that's just in the garden area. We've also got the cooking demonstrations in the clean heat tent as well. So something for everyone.
And Faye's talking.
Faye will be there.
So you've got a lot of guest speakers.
We've got the best, the best of the best.
Best of the best. Yeah.
You have to say that. You're sitting right next to me.
I'm in thumping distance, aren't I? All good. So looking forward to it. Can't wait. I love the garden show. It's been going for more than 50 years. You've probably all, Faye has some amazing recollections of
memories. Yeah. I used to take my nana.
Wow.
So when I got my driver's license.
Oh, how lovely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I just loved seeing all the different plants there. I missed the days when the societies were able to come along because they bring so much more to it.
Yeah.
But the people, you know, we know and support all the people. Many of them are guests on our shows. Brilliant. So it's a good reason to get along and support the industry. Yeah.
And it's such a positive and happy place
environment.
As well. It really is. Everyone's happy to be there, and you're amongst other gardeners.
You can't help but bump into all the other crazy gardening ladies or men.
Yeah, brilliant. So.
And that's at Langley Park.
That's right. Yep.
So easy access.
Yeah.
Nice flat venue.
Yep. Yes, very accessible, and increased parking as well this year.
Good.
Parking is capped at $7 on site.
Great.
And there's nearby CPP parking as well. So.
I did love the parcel pickup. That was all very smooth. Just drive through, plants go into your boot, and off you go
off
again.
You go.
Brilliant.
Yeah, we love that.
You can shop to your heart's content.
I've bought some quite a few plants over the years from the garden festival. Even my acacia fettuccine that is grown into a monster in my backyard. I bought him from the garden festival some years ago. I think when it was at McCallum Park. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I still have a lot of these, treasures that I have picked up over the time. Yeah. Doing extremely well.
Well, and you've got all the ability to go shopping at all these different nurseries in one place. You don't have to head out north, the river, east,
south.
It's
all there. Yeah,
the
nucleus.
They come to us.
Let's
make it worth their while.
That's the beauty of it.
Brilliant. Yep.
Okay, well, we're definitely looking forward to that. And I know it's a heck of a lot of work, Lisa, and I imagine you've got a bit of a team helping you
great
right
volunteers.
Now.
I am putting the call out for some more volunteers if anyone wants to help.
What does that entail?
Well, both with the building the plant display at the NGI WA marquee and also being on the event, talking to people, being advocates for the event.
Oh, great.
Doing a bit of a survey as
well. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm sure there'd be a lot of people interested in that. And Bill from Sandsman is asking whether there's disabled parking near the festival.
Yes. There absolutely is. Yeah.
Right
on
at the front.
Grounds. That's
yeah, right.
Right
at the front. Yeah, yeah,
and
absolutely.
It is all flat, as you say. So.
Yeah, well, that is. It's a really easy to move about surface. So, yeah, excellent. Excellent location. All right. We do need to go to the 9 o'clock news. Catherine, we haven't forgotten about you.
That's fine.
Look forward to learning a little bit more about. Tells me that you have some ideas to tackle chili thrip, which is a big problem in Perth, as you're already aware.
Yep.
You've got some alternative ideas. We would love to hear them. Okay, we shall return. It's 9 o'clock, everyone. Mostly sunny today with a maximum of 25. Right now it's 16.5 and the humidity is sitting at 81%. The minimum will drop down to 12 overnight. Mostly sunny again tomorrow with a maximum of 25. And looking ahead to Monday, mostly sunny with a maximum of 27. And I can see 27s right through to Friday of next week. Amazing
Woo-hoo!
Weather, guys. Well, Faye loves it. Yeah, yeah. Whereas I feel guilty because I want rain. I do. I feel guilty saying it's a beautiful day because I keep thinking we need the rain. It's a bit of conflicted is the word I'm looking for. We're going straight out to Carramar. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm not used to this. I have a hibiscus bush. It was beautiful, eh? But I've had these giant, I think the locusts, they're not grasshoppers, they're huge. And I've tried every remedy, but it's absolutely decimated the tree. Is it too early to chop it down?
Look, I think you can.
Or do I need that for the winter?
Well, I wouldn't do it in winter. If you do it now, you will get some new growth before the cold season comes. The best time is to cut back around October, and that will also encourage bigger blooms on your hibiscus. But hibiscus are great growers, and if you've got them in your garden and they're reaching your gutters or they're overtaking your paths, now is certainly a good time to keep them in check.
Yeah, I keep them down because I have cut it down before, but not as low as what. But they've eaten everything. All the leaves have even eaten everything, flowers, everything, and it doesn't matter what I put on, they just keep jumping out.
It sounds like you've got an awful lot of them, which
I have,
which maybe indicates a bit of a lack of predators happening in your garden. So it might be worth, for the future, thinking about planting some things to attract honey eaters and so on, which will forage and eat those grasshoppers.
I've got gardenias and vincas and frangipanis and all them sort of flowers.
Maybe some grevilleas.
All right, I'll write that down here.
Yep, they will really bring the birds in and create a bit of nesting habitat for the birds. The birds go through a lot of grasshoppers when they're feeding their babies.
Oh,
especially nice little young grasshoppers. They'll clean them up before they have a chance to get really big and do an awful lot of damage.
And Teresa, you could put a bird bath near your hibiscus as well, because if you've got a bird bath there and you've got water for the birds, they're often looking for somewhere to hide. And if you can get them going into your hibiscus, like Catherine said, they'll target some of those grasshoppers.
Oh, okay. I've got a bird bath out the back, but I can always put it out the front.
Oh, get another one.
You're gonna have too many.
Oh, okay. I put bowls of water down, but I can get another one.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Have a good day.
And you. Thank you.
Thanks, Teresa.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
So shall we pick up our discussion on the chili thrips?
Okay. Mm.
Yes.
What have you been seeing, Catherine?
A few years ago, I was predicting that the chemical treatments were not going to work in the long run. And now I'm talking to people who have sprayed and sprayed and sprayed and their roses still look terrible and they're pulling them out.
Mm.
More and more people.
Yes, correct.
And I think, sadly, this is what is inevitable if we fail to recognise that the problem in the whole thing is lack of biodiversity, relying on chemical treatments to deal with a pest instead of focusing on plant health and looking at what are the mechanisms that support and encourage chili thrip. So those things are plant stress, is very a common, easy thing. So it could be water stress that makes plants more susceptible to pests and diseases. I've been to gardens where people have pulled out a whole bunch of roses and they're asking me, what shall I plant next?
Yeah.
And they've left some of their roses. And I look at the soil and I get my moisture meter out and they're watering twice a week, 20 minutes, retick. And I get my moisture meter and I poke it around everywhere, dry, 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 everywhere. Okay.
And that's so a perfect environment.
Water repellent. Mm. The water is not going in.
Mm.
Often there's a concave surface, so there's a slope. So irrigation will run off the slope. There's no mulch. There's no underplanting. So it's very sterile environment. There's no biodiversity. There's no predator food to feed predators to attack the chili thrip and keep them hanging around. So there's a whole lot of different things which are coming together to create the perfect scenario for the chili thrip to thrive. So I think if we really want to manage the roses in a way that is going to improve their health, reduce and minimise chili thrip, because I don't believe we're ever going to get rid of it.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
There's always going to be some
damage. Always going to be around.
Mm-hmm. So it's about tolerating minimal damage, creating a scenario that is not as favourable for the chili thrip.
Mm.
So that includes having life underneath the roses. So it's part of the life cycle of the chili thrip. It drops down to pupate in the soil. If that soil is full of lions and tigers and bears and all these little, like under my microscope, I've seen Faye's nodding, she's laughing. She knows what it looks like under there. There's little things called pseudoscorpions.
Oh, so cute.
They're so cute. And they have big nippers. And you know, it's those little things that would find a baby chili thrip an absolute feast.
Feast, yeah.
So obviously it takes time to build up this diversity. Once you've been spraying, it's like Agent Orange. It denudes everything, and you're killing off all of those little beneficials as well. So there is a transition period where some damage will need to be tolerated to reverse that. And the other thing that we tend to do is we see damage and we cut it off.
Mm.
And if you do that in the window where the chili thrip is really active, which is when we've still got really hot weather, so this extended warm, dry conditions means extended pest pressure. So if you do prune off at this time, the rose will be stimulated to put on fresh growth, especially if you apply fertilizer as well. And you'll get that lush growth, the chili thrip will take off again. And in the meantime, the rose is, its energy reserves are being depleted every time that happens.
Well, of course, when you cut, the rose has to find the energy to push out new growth. Yes. If you see signs of chili thrips and you make that decision to spray, you would say you're better off to leave the damaged growth there, because you're spraying anyway. Yes. You're going to get anything that's on there, and you then just have to allow it time to... It can still photosynthesize because there is some leaf there. The rose then doesn't have to push out new growth. Yes. As well. Mm.
So doing your other checks, like making sure that the water that you're putting on is going in properly.
Yeah. I think that's a really important one.
It's absolutely critical. And yeah. for setting up new garden beds, I think clay is so important. You know, I can foresee a time in the not too distant future when we'll be forced to cut back to one drink a week.
Stop. Oh, my Lord.
Well, yeah. when you look at the environment and what's yes. happening now, hello, and, no and rain for 6 months.
Yeah.
And what are we doing? We're planting plants that don't suit our environment. You only have to look at the 40-plus degree temperatures. What actually is looking good? We run around all summer making sure that the water gets everywhere, that there's no blockages in our retic. When something goes awry, you're running off to the hardware. Like, is that the treadmill that we want to be on? How can we do it better? What are your key words for having a garden that makes you feel good?
For me, it's plants. The plants that give me the greatest joy at the moment are the ones that are thriving despite all this heat. And just, they look green and lush, like, you know, I've got, there's some natives in there. Some natives are struggling too. You know, so there's some that are coping better than others, and that can also be because in our environment now we have the issue of water repellency, and people expect, because natives are natives, that they should just
automatically survive. Yeah.
But we've created very different conditions to the way nature does it, which is putting lots of different things together, leaf litterers, mulch, and digging animals, which will, if there's a little bit of hydrophobic saw happening, you get the little bandicoots and things digging little holes, and that creates divots where water can pool and
bioturbation,
beautiful. That's a gorgeous word. So there's a whole ecology that happens around the function of a native plant. And I've got this beautiful little book which I got very many years ago with me today, which is called The Long Dry, and it's The Bush Colours of Summer and Autumn in Southwestern Australia by Alex George.
Oh.
Yep. And it's beautiful. It's got pictures of the bush where it has gone into a protective mode through the dry months. And then that same bush, when it's greened up again after the rain. And so the plants have this capacity. They call it, he called it dialogy. In this book, he proposed that it would be called dialogy, which is derived from the Greek word dialogue, meaning interchange, to describe the variable colour states. And I was so pleased to see when I thought, well, this is old now. This was produced in, published in 2002, I jumped on the internet and put that word in.
Yeah, to see what it come up with.
Yes, and it's been taken up.
Has it?
You know, which is just so lovely. So there's a recent research article which was published on April 2020, Anatomical Aspects of Xeromorphy in Arid-Adapted Plants of Australia. So that was published in the Australian Journal of Botany, number 68. And so that's looking at how the plants have adapted. So the idea with the Australian plants is that perhaps this came about from adaptation to dry climates through mesic times in the past, and then they've been able to modify over time to adjust to the gradual drying climate up to the present time. Now this is the way it's designed to work, and it's adaptive, but when we disrupt by taking away some of the functionality of the landscape by having bare areas, having
roadways,
this water apparency, roadways, then that functionality ceases to work. And this is where we have problems in the regional areas with, and goes for Perth as well, with the small water cycle. So the small water cycle is about having vegetation in place that keeps that water moving across the landscape as it releases water vapour into the air that forms clouds and so on, carrying that rainfall further in. And I'm very curious about these recent rain events, like this last one I was so hopeful, and you could see it just coming down, yeah. coming down, and then it folded back on itself and went up again and didn't come down.
You know why?
The heat sink.
Mm. It gets to Perth, and yeah. because it's so hot, the cloud rises and it moves away.
Yeah.
We've changed yeah. the environment.
And that's
just part of it.
Yeah. Mm. This is what I think about when I drive around looking at these barren, desertified verges,
yeah.
Fake grass,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's increasing this heat sink, all of these bare areas and lack of trees and cover.
Mm.
And the thing is, it's only going to get harder if we keep getting these long, dry summers and less and less rainfall. It's going to get harder to establish the trees down the track. We need to do it now.
It's a big lesson, and we've lost so many trees as well because of the polyphagous shothole borer. So
yeah.
the biodiversity is very important. We can't just plant all the same thing. We need variety, and we need to get planting now.
And there's so many gorgeous tough things that can be used.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine. Yeah. We'll move on.
Yes, okay. Back shortly. Curtain Radio. You're with Ray and Faye. This is Let's Talk Gardening, and our guests in the studio, Lisa Passmore, Executive Officer of the Nursery and Gardening Industry of WA, and Catherine Hubble from Biotiful. Her specialties being permaculture and biological farming and natural systems educator. And you've just been listening to Catherine for a good 20 minutes talking about exactly that. And Catherine was just saying off air, she'd love to hear from listeners and to tell us about plants that are doing really well in your garden on minimal amounts of water. What's doing well for you?
Yeah, I've noticed with the cooler temperatures, the nighttime drop and the shorter daylight hours, many of my plants are just going into the mode of, oh, it's autumn, let's do our thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, they're not so bothered about the water as much. Like they're just moving forward regardless.
Yeah, I was pondering Catherine's exact question yesterday as I was taking a break from some gardening jobs and looking across to the jacaranda trees.
Mm.
I've got two on the property. Neither of them are irrigated at all.
Mm.
They're fully established and they are loving, loving
this
temperature.
May I ask Lisa how old they are?
Oh, they'd have to be 15 to 20 years old, easily.
What I've noticed just driving here was that the old trees are fine. The young trees, the new trees that are being planted are not taking off. They're just not, they don't seem to be responding.
You're talking jacaranda?
Jacarandas,
yeah. I think I have noticed myself that the young ones take a little while to settle in. But once they're established, and they're from South Africa and
big root
other dry, dry parts of the world, so they're quite adapted to the hot weather. So yeah, I'd love to hear from listeners too. It's a great idea. What's thriving?
Yeah, 94841927.
We're seeing a lot of trees around our streets that are, you know, giving up. They just can't manage. I noticed one of my bottle brushes yesterday started to go into decline. Oh. Well, actually two. And I had lost one, which, you know, we believe had got to the end of its life. That'd be around 40 years old. But they leave a big gap, and they take so long to re-establish plants unless you grow fast-growing ones, which they're fast-growing often because they're going to get really, really big. So
yeah.
I'm not sure what the answer is, but I know it's a call to gardeners and non-gardeners to have a look around at our landscape and look at what we want for the future. and start now. I mean, we're such a tourist hot spot, but if we don't look after the place that we've got, we won't be as attractive.
Yeah, and every tree planted has a positive impact. You were, you know, talking before about the changing climate in Perth. We need more trees, and as Kathy mm-hmm. mentioned, the coverage, getting the ground covered with plants is absolute key, and a diversity of plants is key. And what I was hearing before in Kathy's talk about the chili thrip is, if we can avoid those toxic chemicals. So if you're going to use any sprays, look at the safe ones like a horticultural oil or a soap spray. But be really careful because they can still impact on the good bugs as well. But, yeah, we want to look after the soil, don't we? Get more plants in.
Do you think something like frass would be a good use around
I'm really
chili,
curious to see.
Around yep. the roses? Yep. Yeah. Yep. I'm happy to experiment with that.
Yeah. If Charisse, if you're listening... Charisse has got a few stories about the frass.
Yeah.
In dealing with mealybug and...
Okay.
And what's the other little wiggly things in pots?
Scale?
No. In the soil. Name's in the soil. Out of my head. You all know it.
Nematodes.
Curl grabs.
No. Little, not grubs.
Come on, this
is worms. Short worms.
You know, those little flies that come around and
fungus
annoying.
Gnats.
Fungus gnats. Ah. Yeah. It's helped with fungus gnats and nematodes as well. So, I would be really curious.
Well, it's like
to
competition,
see.
Isn't it? Because the soldier flies will break down any rotting matter. Is that what you.
Yeah. No, it's more about the. The soldier flies have an exoskeleton, which is chitin, and so they're constantly shedding this exoskeleton, which builds up in the soil, which encourages the breakdown of chitin and releases, this is my understanding, chitinase, which breaks down chitin. So that becomes a plant... protective compound, so it becomes part of the plant immune system to break down the mouth parts of which are made of chitin, of things like a root knot nematode. The spear is made of chitin. Little chewing, sucking insects, their mouth parts are made of chitin. So that's my understanding of how it works. I've had, I think it's still, there's not a lot of research that I'm aware of at the moment, but I have heard of things from years ago where people have used, farmers have used chitosan, which is a more concentrated product for sure. In a cropping situation to get rid of one bug, and then they've noticed in the next season an increased vigour of the plants, like a very obvious strip where they had used that from the previous season, and it's having a positive benefit. Mm. So one farmer was saying, well, I think possibly it's having an impact on the nematodes, the root-feeding nematodes. So... yeah, I think it's really interesting. Could be interesting place to play with, and if anyone has any good stories about it, then I'd love to hear them.
Mm. All right. Well, we do have someone responding about what's surviving in her garden. Jasmine, how are you?
Oh, getting there. Girls, I'm totally, native plants. I have a banjo that's grown huge this year. Or the grevilleas have gone mad. The hakea arena's glorious. I did lose a small oak leaf hakea, been out of action since February, and also my garden is out of action. So everything's overgrown, and I'm not worrying about it. It'll all happen when spring comes. But please, people out there, check, you know, your nursery should know what's local. Go to your council. Some councils have wonderful native plant freebies,
yeah.
And Yeah, and, you know, this is one area where we do, fortunately. And just go native. You'll be so surprised. It's a little bit of work to start with, but do it.
The choice of native plants is just phenomenal, isn't it? And I guess also local native compared to maybe eastern states native has
course,
a bit of a bearing.
It does. It does, yes. And this little banksia, it was unnamed when I picked it up on the cheapie, and it's the cones are all gold the whole way up. So I'm not quite sure what it is, but it doesn't grow extra high. It's about 2-something metres. Very big bush. It would be nearly 3 metres across. Just gone mad.
Mm.
Absolutely gone mad.
I bet the birds go nuts for it.
Yes, well, it's outside my bedroom window, and I don't get around much anymore, so I have all the New Hollands and the little brown honey eaters and the
mockers.
They're all coming in, and there's always plenty of water out there. So that's the way to go, and you've got a glorious garden with lots of different flowers.
Oh, lovely. Thank you, Jasmine. Thanks for calling in.
Take care, you lot. Bye.
You too. And a question for you, Lisa. Rob from Kiara wants to know whether there's a shuttle from the rail line to Langley Park. Do we have anything
I'd be checking the website for those details. There certainly will be links to, there will be access via public transport. So I'd check the website, which is perthgardenfestival.com for more information on the access of public transport.
Okay. All right, let's head to Stirling. Leslie, how are you?
I'm very well, and I rang to initially just say what a fantastic morning of information you're giving us all. I live in Stirling in the Princeton Estate, which is a lot of fake lawn, and
I know where you are.
Unbelievable. In my backyard, that's blooming. It looks magnificent for the end of summer. And I've got maidenhairs doing well. I've got crotons doing well. I have elephant ears that I'm looking at becoming a problem that have got so large. But the front yard, my roses at the front with chili thrip, they were beautiful roses. And now I'm, getting to the stage of ripping them out. I don't know what the heck to put there. But if I can plant undercover stuff through the summer and have that there, and a variety, but I just need to know what to plant, and I'll give it another go. I'll keep at it.
I head down to your local garden centre and have a chat with them as well and have a look at what's looking good and have a think about whether you want something that's going to flower all year round, so something in the different seasons, or if you've got a favourite season, and have a chat with them. And our last caller just reminded us about the Plants for Residents program. So the councils, I'd be looking out for those. You'll be hearing about those soon, or inquire with your local council. I was online last night looking at the shopping list for the City of Kalamunda and choosing some plants for our verge area.
Oh, lovely.
I haven't actually participated other than being a speaker at the Plants for Residents shopping days, but this year I'm going to get some tube stock for my verge.
Very nice. Leslie,
since we moved in, we planted 9 trees. And most of them are on the verge, but or just inside the verge, so giving a lot of shade out there, and they're taking a long time to grow, I will say, but we now have canopy after 9 years.
Yes,
which is wonderful. And I think that'll make all the difference too, when I can have a bit of an understory and cut the heat down.
Brilliant.
Leslie, I've got some old-fashioned ideas on what to plant in a rose garden. I say that because it's something that I had always done, and I'm looking to mix it up a bit. But I love a border of white alyssum. And it's a great habitat for your beneficial insects. Salvias, of course, great for birds. Yeah. And once established, they can be very hardy. Marigolds to keep away your nematodes. And also because the yellow flowers can attract the thrips away from your roses. Yep. You could use ornamental garlic. which,
all right,
if
yeah.
it's going to provide the same benefit as garlic, it will repel pest yeah. insects. Chives is another one, so you could get the benefit of edibles as well as onion plants amongst them. And ageratum, which, you know, these plants will be fantastic from autumn through. They may not yep. all be happy in summer on minimal watering, but they'll certainly get you through the cooler months.
The one that one that just keeps coming back in between my roses is basil. I have a magnificent basil
wonderful.
I'm giving to everybody, and that's growing very well underneath the roses in one particular spot. So I think I might add a lot of other, I'll put the chives in there as well. I'll do all these.
And the purple basil would look fantastic. Yeah. Now, I don't know how you'll go in the winter. I know I often lose basil through the middle of winter or late winter. Yep. And another one, of course, is the perennial basil, which hangs on a bit longer or at least that's comes fantastic. Back.
And flowers. Right. Mine has flowered non-stop.
And
non-stop
for brings years. In beneficials, yep. predators, etc.
Fantastic. That's wonderful, ladies. Thank you so much. I love your show. Wouldn't miss it for the world, and I really thank you for all your help you've given me here.
Oh, thank you, Leslie. Years.
Lovely.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Okay,
bye.
And we're heading down to Coogee. We're talking about camellias. Marlene, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for calling back. I've got a bit of a problem with my camellias. They're full of buds, beautiful big buds, but mostly all of the leaves, half of them at least, are brown tips.
Okay.
That's, you know what to do.
That's interesting because we have received a photo of brown tips or edges. Really? But you're in Coogee, which yes. your soil would potentially be alkaline. So
yes, very much so.
You might look at the pH. If you're growing camellias in pots, you would use a mix suitable for acid-loving plants.
Yes.
But in your soil, you may have to add sulfur to change the pH. But changing pH is really hard to do.
Yeah.
You could use a foliar feed to give the plant what it needs. But yes. I think the bottom line is you're growing a plant that likes acid soil in alkaline soil. And I don't know that that's ever going to change.
Oh, how sad is that? The buds are so beautiful on them. Mm. And the flowers are lovely red flowers, you know, last year when I bought the plant. But,
I think that's a good opportunity for you to get it into a pot and grow in a large pot.
It is in a pot.
It is in a large pot, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm baffled as to why it's doing that.
What potting mix have you potted it into?
The normal potting mix premium.
Okay, if you can repot it again, put it into one that is for camellias and azaleas.
Oh, right, I can change half of the soil at least then.
Yes, that will put you on the right track.
Okay, then. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome, Marlene.
I listen every week. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Have a good day. Bye.
And we do have Carol waiting to talk about what's surviving in her garden. Carol, we just have a little break and we'll be chatting to you on the other side of this. Curtain Radio. You're listening to Let's Talk Gardening straight out to the lines. We're in Ocean Reef. Carol, thank you for waiting.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. I love your show. I live in Ocean Reef and my garden faces to the ocean.
Yeah.
So it gets a little bit of shade in the morning, but in the afternoon it's extremely hot. And I have the little butterkins bush and the dwarf apricot oleander with society garlic along as a border, and that's just gone mad, like thrived through the heat.
Yeah.
I also planted some zinnias.
Yes.
And they actually took the heat very well. I was amazed. They grew tall and they just flowered and flowered and flowered.
Mm. Yeah, so they're all winners. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And then I have the big red geranium, and of course that flowers all year round.
As well.
That's been magnificent, yes. So just a few ideas might be for the, you know, for people.
Absolutely. No, we appreciate you ringing in and sharing.
Wonderful. Yes, thank you, Carol. And yes, any of the like summer annuals like zinnias just provide such a wow pop of colour, don't they? You don't have to have them through your whole garden. You could just have a pot.
I just put little pockets of little, you know, parts all through the shrubbery with the butterkins, and then I had portulaca right round the border because it's a half moon shaped garden, and they it's absolutely beautiful through the summer, even with the heat.
Oh, fantastic! Well done, Carol. Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, and I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye. Cheers, Carol. Now, Jan from North Yundurup wants to know when to harvest sweet potatoes. She says they have tubers.
Over to you, Catherine.
We were discussing this question. I'm planning on harvesting mine pretty soon. You can hold off until beginning of winter if you really want to. So it just depends on what's going to work for you. Maybe you just want to harvest a few and slowly go through the patch. I always leave some of mine in the ground. I've got them in a raised bed, and the leaves spill down over the sides. And I, even though the greens tend to go off a little bit with the colder weather, I still usually get enough for a feed, you know, just to add to meals here and there. And also what I do while at this time of the year is I take cuttings. So I've got three different varieties of sweet potato in my bed. I've got an orange, I've got the Hawaiian, which is the white, pale skin and purple flesh, and I've got a violet one, which is violet skin, violet flesh.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a stunning thing. I haven't got too many of them at the moment, but I'm going to build up my supply.
All right, I've got four tickets to the Perth Garden Festival to give away. You must be a Curtin FM member is all we ask. We will mail these tickets out to you. So there is four tickets. They're valued at $28 each, so very handy to win. If you'd like to give Jill a call right now on 94841927, you could be walking away with a free ticket entry to the Perth Garden Festival, which is on between the 9th and the 12th of May at Langley Park, and each day it's open 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Compliments of the nursery and gardening industry of WA. Would that be right?
Absolutely.
I hope I have it right. Thank you, Lisa. So if you'd like to go to the garden show, here's your chance to get a free entry ticket valued at $28. Give Jill a call right now, 94841927, and the phone's already taking off. Good luck to everyone.
Absolutely.
We look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Now, we've received an email. It says, leaves dying on a cacao tree. And this is from Roz. The cacao tree is in a pot. It's up against a what looks like a Super 6 fence. And some of the leaves are browning around the edge. Now, it's happening on the older and newer leaves, so right across the plant. It could be heat stress. Or it could be poor drainage. Now, the pot is not that big. I would repot the plant into a slightly larger pot and add some fresh potting mix. That will also give you an opportunity to have a look at the roots and the mix and to see if it is dry or wet, and that might tell you what's wrong with the plant. Mm. Common problem at this time of year. I'd also get it away from the fence because it could be suffering from reflective heat. When it gets a little bit bigger, it will provide its own canopy and shade. But, yeah, that's what I do with that for now. Ray, on today is the Wildflower Society plant sale for Northern Suburbs Wildflower Society. So that's on at Lansdale Plant Farm.
Yes.
Lansdale Farm in up near
Darch.
Yes. Yep. So I don't have more details here, just that it's on today. So if anyone's interested in that. Coming up next weekend is the Northern Districts Orchid Society at 9 to 3 on Sunday. the 5th of May, Bruce Douglas Pavilion. And another open garden that I have to mention coming up next weekend, Saturday and Sunday in Banja, my very good friend April.
Yes.
And that is a 5-acre property with stunning autumn trees changing colours.
Mm.
And I've been watching this garden grow since it first began over 20 years ago. And Ron and April have really honed their skills on all things gardening. He's a master of not only building but also lawns. And there are expansive areas where you can sit and enjoy the ambiance. April has a very large rose garden. She actually took my advice about spraying water over the foliage in the middle of the day, and she's managed to pretty much keep the chilly thrips in check.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not perfect, but she's not resorted to any chemicals because she wouldn't dare after what I've said. So, yeah, she's having good or reasonable results with that. And the trees are stunning. There's a range of varieties there. She's got a cottage garden, a shade house, a hot house. They've got chickens and an orchard. And that's you'll be amazing. Able to sit on the veranda and look out over the property.
It is a beautiful garden.
What's the garden called? It sounds incredible.
Donnell Park, and that was named after her parents. Her mother used to work at Dawson's, and April has certainly gained a lot of experience and knowledge on all things gardening. And, of course, she also has an aroid obsession at the current minute. So, yeah, a credit to them. They hosted a wedding in summer this year, and it was just amazing. Just such a beautiful garden to get ideas from.
All right. Now, we do have winners for our Perth Garden Festival ticket giveaway. Bill of Sampson, Amanda of Victoria Park, Anne in Forestfield, and Mary of Canning Vale. So congratulations, guys. And we will be putting these in the mail to you early this week, and you'll have them in your hot little hands. Enjoy. Okay. We need to take a break. On the other side, I think I will go again, and we've got another gift voucher to give away. Nice time to be listening to the station, I would think. Curtain Radio. And we are back. Okay, as promised, I'm going to give away, poor Jill out there, another gift voucher. This one is from Green Life Soil Co. So it's up for grabs right now. You must be a Curtain FM member and not to have won a prize in the last 28 days. John's question is, put your thinking caps on because he means business, our John Glidden. J.K. Rowling used some really archaic words when naming her characters. In Old English, was a Dumbledore a turnip, a cabbage, or a bumblebee? In Old English, was a Dumbledore a turnip, a cabbage, or a bumblebee? Give Jill a call. She's laughing on over there. Give Jill a call right now on 9484 1927. Off you go.
Now, Catherine, you've brought in a beautiful vase of moringa, and we had a listener call in a couple of weeks ago. He wanted to save the seed of the pods. Mm-hmm. Now, you've got an interesting tip for green pods.
Yes.
Go for it.
So you can eat the green pods as well as the leaves and the flowers.
Yeah.
And this is why I really love this tree, and it's been really a good survivor in my tough garden. And the pods grow quite prolifically. The tree is, I've let it grow fairly tall. You can coppice them, so it's easier to harvest all of these things. And depending on the space you've got and what your needs are, you can just manage the shape of it. So the pods you want to eat would be the more immature pods, so the skinnier, smaller pods. So I reckon probably fat pencil size or thereabouts would be ideal.
And when they're pencil thickness, they're about probably 20 centimetres long, aren't they?
No.
Long and skinny?
No, I've got some about 40 centimetres long.
Well, I say that because I had a plant pop up on the verge. So it gets no water. It's growing through summer. It's flowering and producing these skinny, short pods compared to yours.
Right. It's doing well. It's doing well for a young one. Yeah, so there's recipes. I just did it for the first time last night. I cooked some up, and it's a little bit like the pods have a very stringy, tough outer layer, which you... So you kind of chew them like you would artichoke leaves, and you get the softer inner bits out, and then you discard, just discreetly put that aside.
Mm.
So you need to have it in smallish pieces within... I did something like a shakshuka base for it. If you want to grow them from... If you want to let them seed, you need to let them get quite big and dry on the tree. So they need to really mature well. And these... I've noticed that these longer, really dry conditions are absolutely perfect for harvesting moringa seeds because there's less mildew around. The plants are drying up, the seeds are drying off properly and really well. They're maturing properly. So the bigger the seeds, the better.
And they're a highly nutritious plant, aren't they, the moringa tree?
Absolutely, yeah.
Is it drumstick?
Drumstick, yep.
Or miracle tree, you can use every part of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And tell me, Lisa, are you still lecturing? Are you still? Are these? How many hats are you wearing at the moment? I know that your main gig is, you know, NGIWA, obviously.
I do still have a few hats at Urash.
Do yeah.
At home base.
You're still lecturing and
with the garden design course.
Teaching, yes.
And I'm still doing a little bit of garden design for a couple of existing clients that have come back to me, so I'm looking after.
Keep your hand in there. Garden design, and I do hear you from time to time on a competitor radio station. I might say in the evening, I've heard you.
Yes,
yeah, you do like a phone in. It's very good.
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
Good on you.
Wednesday night, once a fortnight.
Yeah.
Yep. That's good fun.
Yes.
I really enjoy that. And, do you know, I'm most excited today. This cooler weather, I can't wait to get out into the garden.
I know, exactly. I wish you all the luck with the Perth Garden Festival coming up in May. Yes, we encourage everyone to get along and support the gardening industry here in Perth. So we're very big advocates of that. Now, we also do have a winner for the Green Life Soil Co. 75 gift dollar voucher, Kevin of Bennett Springs. Good on you. That'll be mailed to you this week. Now, the question was, J.K. Rowling used some really archaic words when naming her characters. In Old English, was a Dumbledore a turnip, a cabbage, or a bumblebee? The answer is a bumblebee. Okay, thank you for playing with us. And I think we got a couple of minutes left to play, Faye, if you want to wrap up.
Just to say that we received an email from Gail, and she was enjoying listening to the show, and she has a book called A New Image for West Australian Plants, and found it to be really helpful in designing her garden. She said, I definitely will not part with this book. And it was put out by George Lowell-Fitz. And yes, I too have this book, and it's a bit of a Bible. Lots of pretty colour pictures and good performing plants for Perth gardens.
And so, it's grouped by season, so you can actually select the flowers, the plants that you want to flower in each season. I love that.
I love that.
Do you know what? Mm. One of my tips is for gardening or setting up gardens is to go to a nursery or garden centre every season or every month or every week, whatever, and buy something that is like powering away in that season, whether it's flowering or, and of course, build up your garden with diversity, something on the lower level to shade the ground and suppress weeds and trees to bring in the birds and act as a perch, and prickly plants to protect the birds and lizards. And it's a beautiful time to be out there gardening. But listen to your garden, listen to what it's telling you, and go easy on yourself. Make it easy.
All right. Thank you so, so much, ladies, for joining us this morning. Really appreciate your information, giving up your very valuable time to share with us and obviously Curtin FM listeners. And a huge thanks to Jill Flores for jumping in the hot seat while Bev is away, and also our John Glidden, our researcher, our garden chef, our everything is our John Glidden. He supports us incredibly well. Coming up next, George Minoldi with the classic 60s. And my gardenism for the morning is, the most noteworthy thing about gardeners is that they are always optimistic,
always enterprising and never satisfied. They always look forward to doing something better than they have ever done before. How true is that? Look after yourselves, everybody. Yes.
I just have one more call out to do, and that's for my grandmother, Rachel Mitchell, who is turning 102 years old, and I'm off to celebrate her birthday tomorrow with her in Donnybrook.
Oh, my goodness. Wonderful. That is quite something. Yeah, well done.
Very
yeah.
special.
Very, very special. All right, everyone, look after yourselves. Have a great weekend and happy gardening.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to another edition of Let's Talk Gardening on Curtin Radio. Happy gardening.